The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another spring training edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. This, barring an emergency show, like maybe if one of the big three get extended, perhaps a crochet extension happens, we will be back to cover that. So I guess, you know, that could be another spring training show, but tentatively, this will be the final one. This Monday night, we will be live on all the apps, covering our season-long predictions. So we're going to do the division winners. We're going to do the wild card teams for each league. We're going to do the MVP, Cy Youngs. And then in the end of the show, we will do our World Series matchups. So expect that on Monday. It's a longer show. Every single Bastards of Boston host will be on it. But it's fun, and I look forward to it every year, especially since we're going to be competitive. So again, we are on all the apps right now, and we'll be on YouTube every show going forward. I'm not sure we'll do it on Twitter and Facebook every time, but we'll be doing it often. I can promise you that. So we already have a live audience as I don't know if you guys can see it or not in the upper left of the screen, but with me tonight, Nick Diamond, Jason Kelly. How are you guys? It's a new setup for 2025.
Yeah, no, I'm doing pretty well. Excited for the new setup and everything. Everyone can finally see my beautiful face, as I'm sure you all were really lacking for that. So yeah, it's exciting, and you obviously have a good season ahead of us, so it's gonna be a lot of fun.
I feel exactly the same way. This new setup already is, it just looks way better, and I hope it sounds better and provide a lot more content, and everyone, all the fans can actually see us and put a face behind it. So I'm excited for what's to come in 2025 for the Red Sox and for the Bastards.
Well, I've said previously in recent weeks, this is the best crew we've ever had, and we're going into what should be the best season we've had in a long time since 2018. So the stars are aligned pretty well. All right, well, let's just get into it. A lot of developments have happened. Nothing official yet, but it seems like there are some indications based on reports that Aroldis Chapman is the leading candidate to be the closer, at least to start the 2025 season. Jason, your initial reaction?
I don't love it. I know he's got the most experience. Him and Hendricks are probably the most experienced in that bullpen, but this guy walks the ballpark. I mean, that's just the fact of the matter. Like most of his career, that's what he's been. And yeah, he can blow you away with 100 miles an hour, but sometimes he can't hit the side of a battleship with his control. Now, he looked really good in that game against Detroit today. He struck out the side in the eighth. That's not always going to happen. That'll happen sometimes. Like, when he's on, he can do that. He can go out there and it's 1-2-3, boom, boom, it's done. But when he's not on, which the last couple of years, that's been the case, it's a walk here and there, it's a base hit. You know, he's not missing many bats. The control's all over the place. And I get that Cora is giving it to the more experienced guy because maybe he doesn't trust Justin Slayton yet. You know, Slayton has looked really good so far, but he got injured a little bit last year. He's still kind of young, maybe a little bit raw in Cora's eyes. Hendricks, I think, was a guy that I advocated for, but he's looked rough so far this spring. He almost, you know, gave up the game today against Detroit. So I think Cora's just looking for a guy that at least out of the gates will serve him well. But ultimately, if Aroldis Chapman is closing games for this team in September, you know, hopefully heading into October baseball, there's a problem, because you can do so much better than that. And whether it's at the trade deadline, they pick someone up, or if Garrett Whitlock, you know, eventually emerges as the closer, he's had a pretty good spring so far. If Cora finally decides he looks healthy, I trust him, he's the ninth inning guy, that's more preferable. Chapman to me is just, it's so Jekyll and Hyde. You can't have that guy pitching ninth innings for you. It sounds like a good idea now because he's got the experience, but you know, the first series where we're facing Baltimore, we've won the first two games. Game three, we're up 4-2 in the ninth, and Chapman walks the bases loaded and blows the game. Cora's going to lose his mind, because you know Cora's sick of losing too. So I think it's just the reality. I don't love it. It's not going to last. I figure by June 1st, Aroldis Chapman will not be the closer of this team. And whether it's officially announced or not, someone else is going to start getting more ninth innings by that time. So I guess for now, just ride with it and ride the roller coaster that is Aroldis Chapman at this point in his career. And hopefully he doesn't blow too many games early, but it shouldn't last. Hopefully it doesn't last.
Nick, how do you feel about it?
My biggest problem with this is we went out and paid Aroldis Chapman to be like the left-handed specialist that comes in a big spot against a big lefty that needs to blow him away. Why are we saving him for the ninth inning? That's what we came and paid him $10 million for. That's like Breslow's first big deal of the offseason. Go ahead, give the closer role to Slayton, give it to Whitlock. Whitlock's experience also, he actually coming 2021, he was dominant in that role. Why can't you give it back to him? I know he's coming off an injury, but it's just really frustrating. And to give it to Chapman, like you said, he walks the world, and it's just, you have other better options out there, at least more consistent options that we trust late in games at this point in his career. I mean, like you said, he'll probably be out of the closer's role by June. He might be good, but I still think he's out of the closer's role by June. I think eventually they're going to hand it over to one of these younger guys, give him the full-time role, and hopefully he'll run with it for years, whether it's Whitlock or if it's Slayton. Luis Guerrero got optioned today, so that was like everybody's sneaky pick, but that was never going to happen. He walks the world as well. So that's all for Chapman for me.
Yeah, so his last full season as a closer was 2021. He had 30 saves with the Yankees, and he's bounced around. He's played with the Rangers, the Royals, last year with the Pirates for the full season. He had, in 2022, he recorded 9 saves, only 6 in all of 2023. And then last year, I think there was an injury to the Pirates closer, so he did close a bunch of games. He recorded 14 saves. He's 37 years old. And to me, the big problem here is if he does start to lose his command and guys start getting on base and perhaps he blows some saves, you're going to have to take it away from him. And that's going to be a big story. He's going to throw a hissy fit. And do we really want young guys like Garrett Whitlock, Justin Slayton, Luis Guerrero having a front row seat to a 37-year-old guy with a history of no emotional stability at times? Like, is that really what you want your kids to do? And I polled you guys all today. I polled the entire crew, all 6 of us. 4 of us wanted Whitlock, 2 wanted Slayton. None of us wanted Chapman. Not one guy on the crew said Chapman's a good idea. I chose Whitlock, and I do like Slayton, and I think he could be a closer of the future type guy, but Whitlock's done it. We've lived it. We've seen it. And he's got a very small sample size this year. Nothing's changed since the last episode. He's pitched. He's made 4 appearances so far. Not given up a single earned run in any of those appearances. Where is he? Right here. He has not issued a walk, and he struck out 7 batters in 4 innings. Sign me up for that. He's done it. And Chapman, I think, as Nick sort of alluded to in his opening take, he's far more valuable situationally against lefties. And I'm not saying he's a lefty specialist, but if you got two high leverage left-handed hitters, you know, to in the seventh inning, then that's where you use Aroldis Chapman. That's what we've desperately needed. And now he's the ninth inning automatically. I just don't like it. And I guess my question for you guys is, when things do go sideways, how long of a leash is he going to have? Like, when, how long is it going to take for Cora to admit to himself, whoops, that wasn't a good idea? And then how many games get blown in the process?
If he blows one in the first series, you got to yank him right away. You just got to do it instantly. And Cora's got to be like, we never officially named him the closer. That was all report. We were going by closer by committee, and just go at it that way, because Chapman's not going to take it lightly if he blows one save early on and everybody's calling for him, because it was a bad signing from the start. Nobody wanted him on the team. I don't think any of us actually liked the signing. I think if you're looking at the stuff only, he might have been a good fit for the roster, but realistically, with the personality and everything, he's just not a good fit, and I don't think it's going to mesh well. I think you got to pull him as soon as he messes up.
I don't know if it can be that quick, because with that report coming out today, I mean, if you watch the game, Chapman struck out the side in the eighth. He walked off the mound with like this big smile on his face. Like he looked happy as a clown. Like he looked like a guy who was like, yeah, closer job's mine. Yep. It's mine. Like if he blows one save, you know, early in the season and Cora yanks him, that's just going to cause a dust up, a disgruntled player, whatever. I don't think it can be that quick. But like I said, by late May, if Chapman's out there, if his ERA is starting to get high, if he's starting to, you know, pile up the walks and every, you know, save opportunity he goes out there, you know, is if it's more of a tightrope act than anything else, then Cora has the leverage to say, look, you know, we gave you the closer role, you had a good spring, but now the games count. And now we have a chance to win the division. And you're out there putting guys on base and blowing saves left and right. Meanwhile, Garrett Whitlock's got an ERA under one. And Whitlock doesn't walk guys. That's the beauty of the way he pitches. It's he either strikes him out or he gets a ground ball. So that's ultimately what Cora would prefer, especially with an improved infield defense. If Story stays healthy and, you know, we don't know what's going to happen to second base yet, but, you know, Bregman upgrade at third base. So that's ultimately what he's going to want. You have to give Chapman at this point, because it's leaked out and because, you know, obviously I don't think Cotillo just made that up and ran with it. I think somebody told him that. So Cora obviously likes what he's seen from Chapman, but if by middle of May Chapman's starting to just give up homers and walk the village in the ninth inning, then eventually Cora can say, no, we have a chance to win the division. He's not a closer anymore. We'll still use him in high leverage situations, but we're going to turn the ball over to somebody else. And that's how you manage that.
I don't think Cora is going to be given a choice. If Aroldis Chapman's out there in Fenway Park blowing saves for the Red Sox, the fans are just going to let him have it. He's going to get booed out of Fenway Park, and he has to perform well in this role, or he's going to hate it here. He's going to become hated right off the bat. So I don't think Cora's going to have much of a choice. If things get ugly quickly, he's got no chance staying in that closer role. And I don't know how well he's going to react with the fan base.
You just kind of stole my thunder, because I was going to come back in with, it was not a popular signing. He's not a good guy. You know, you don't hear any lovey-dovey, heartwarming, you know, Aroldis Chapman stories. You know, he's not like Brock Holt hanging out, you know, with the Jimmy Fund type stuff. So you've essentially brought a circus act to the Red Sox. And if things go sideways, it's a self-inflicted thing that that wasn't necessary. There were tons of lefties. I mean, if you were aiming for the moon, there was Tanner Scott. And I didn't really, there were rumors that we were aggressively after him, but you know, it's at that point we didn't have Bregman yet. It was hard to tell how serious things were. We're just used to being the interest kings basically, but there were other options than Chapman. And then we got him and I was fine with the, you know, the seventh or eighth inning role or situationally as lefties came up. But man, I don't know. If we had like, let's say he has a meltdown in Boston and then we go to the Bronx next, the perfect punishment for Chapman would be to put him in a car with Casas and let two different brands of crazy just, you know, just play itself out in the ride down. I don't, and that's the other thing. Casas in and of himself is a circus act. If he's injured or he's slumping and he's doing his, hey, look at me act, you know, while he does yoga. I don't know. It's just, you got a lot of situations. The Devers thing seems to be pretty well simmered now, and we know he's going to DH. And so I don't think that's really a thing anymore, but yeah, so we're not big on the Chapman thing. I like Whitlock. I think Slayton is intriguing. So we'll see what happens there. I wish Liam Hendricks could get it right so that he would be serviceable in a critical role, regardless of what inning it is. But who knows what he has left at 37 years old and hasn't really pitched regularly since I think 2021 or 2022. So we'll see. The other news, I think it broke today, or perhaps it was yesterday. Garrett Crochet has essentially, him and his agents have set a deadline for opening day for the Red Sox to get a deal done. Crochet has all the leverage here, really, as far as what happens. And major fail if the Red Sox don't get a deal done. But Nick, let's lead with you on this one.
Yeah, I've said it multiple times. If the trade was a great trade at the time, but if you don't get this extension done, it's the biggest fail you could possibly make. He's going to go out there, have a great year. He's going to finish top five, top six in Cy Young, maybe even higher. He had a great spring training. I think he's probably going to be in the top four range, and he's going to walk. He's going to get $300 million. He's going to look at the contracts Corbin Burns, Garrett Cole got. He's going to get up there and get 10 years, 8 to 10 years in the open market, because he's going to hit the market at 27 years old. There's no way he's going to sign an extension before opening day. So the Red Sox need to go out there, blow him out of the water, and just get it done. Because if it doesn't get done, I'm going to be super disappointed. The trade's going to look bad in the long run. He's going to put up two great seasons in Boston, but if he walks, it's going to be super disappointing. And it's going to be a total mess up in the front office, because they can easily get this done. They have the resources. They have the cap space coming up. Get this done now. I think it's priority number one. And if you don't get it done by opening day, like I've said a million times, it's a major mess up.
Jason.
Yeah, it's a major gamble for them to be taking if they don't get this extension done before opening day. And if he just says, that's it, we're not talking until the end of the season. If Crochet is, you know, betting on himself, and he goes out there and has a Cy Young caliber year, that price skyrockets. And all of a sudden, you lose all of your leverage. You gave up a lot of prospects to get this guy. You know, Kyle Teal looks like he's ready right now. Like, he's had a really good spring with the White Sox. He could even break in as their everyday catcher. Like, he might be ready now. Montgomery, we don't know yet, but there's a lot of, you know, a lot of scouts out there that said, wow, you know, they got Montgomery in that trade. That's big. So you gave up a lot of capital to get this guy. And I'm not saying you should have had an extension in place right when you made the trade. That's hard to do. But you should have at least been more aggressive with the talks throughout the spring. It feels like to me like that the Red Sox and him were kind of having casual talks about this. But now it feels like he's setting the deadline, because either they're lowballing him, or they're not giving him the years that they want, or that he wants, rather. We know the Red Sox don't feel comfortable paying pitchers, especially to long-term contracts. The last time they gave one out was to Chris Sale, and look what happened. So I think that they're very hesitant to do it. To me, if you don't get it done, and this guy goes into opening day without a contract in hand, and he wins 15, 16, 17 games, over 200 strikeouts, you know, he's in the top five, top 10 of Cy Young voting, you're going to lose him, because I think that price tag is just going to get way too rich for the Red Sox blood. So to the fans out there who are saying that, you know, not nothing to panic about, and, you know, you're worrying over nothing, okay, enjoy the season. Enjoy Kara Crochet the season, and talk to me in September when, again, he's racking up Cy Young votes and there's still no extension in place. And, you know, we'll see what happens, playoffs or otherwise. But right now, you may not be panicking, but in September, October, if this guy's not signed and he has the kind of year that he's capable of, you're going to be panicking a little bit, because that number is going to start to just really, really rise. And we know the Red Sox don't like to pay people. So I think they're taking a huge gamble by not getting the deal done. I don't know what the issue is, whether it's years or money. It's probably both, knowing them. But I wish they would get it done. And we still have a week. So, you know, we'll see. For all we know, by next week, we're talking about, okay, let's break down the Garrett Crochet extension. But at least for now, it doesn't feel like we're headed that way. And that's a little scary. It's kind of a small C concern, because, again, we still have a whole season to play. So let's see what happens. But yeah, small C concern that Garrett Crochet is still without a contract at this moment. Terry, are you on mute?
I am. I had to change the thing on the bottom. So, learning on the fly, new platform. Normally, I don't need to be on mute, but for this platform, I do. So, good catch on that. But so, Crochet is under contract through next season. So we got him for 2 years no matter what. But if you don't get it done by this opening day, you're essentially going to have to pay him what his free agent deal would be, you know, next winter. You know, you'll have to pay him whatever the 2026 free agency thing will be. He'll get the Gerrit Cole deal. And what drives me nuts here is there doesn't seem to be a lot of external pressure here. Like, you don't see the media clamming for it. You don't see them demanding, you know, where are you at with this? Like, this is important. And so that's kind of frustrating. And I think the front office may not feel the urgency that they absolutely should be feeling. And I think what's going on here, see, I said on social media yesterday, the extension should have been in place when the trade happened. They should have agreed with the White Sox. They should have agreed on the framework of what the prospect package would look like. And then before anything was official, pivoted to Crochet's representatives and said, what's it going to take to get a 5 to 7 year deal done? And I think the Red Sox would have had a little bit of leverage in that situation, because I don't think Garrett Crochet wanted to stay in Chicago. So if he's still technically in Chicago and the Red Sox are taking their temperature on a long-term deal, you know, that's how it should have played out. And what had happened was 24 hours before the Crochet deal happened, we lost out on Max Fried. And apparently we gave him an 8-year deal. And I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but at some point this week, it was revealed that the Red Sox had probably the biggest offer on the table for Corbin Burns, but he wanted Arizona all along, much like Alonso wanted to stay in Queens. So So getting back to Crochet, I think that trade was just a knee-jerk reaction thing. They didn't take the extension aspect of it seriously and said, we'll get to it later. Well, guess what? Once Crochet got here, he had all the leverage, and he has all the leverage now. So it's just frustrating. And this may be an apples to oranges type thing, but you look at the Devers extension. If they do that 2 years earlier, they save at least $100 million over a decade. You can probably sign him for $200 million if it happens in at some point in 2021. You get him much cheaper, but they waited. They waited until he was entering his ARB 3 year, and then we had to give him the bag. You know, we gave him $311 million. That's what's going to happen here with Crochet. You can get him now for probably $120 to $150 with maybe team options tacked on beyond that. That should be about what he would get. But if you don't do it, you're giving him, he's going to get the $300 million plus next winter, and you're screwing yourself. So why not do it? And here's my question to you guys. If John Henry won't sign a 25-year-old pitcher with a newly rebuilt elbow, who would he ever sign at that point and for a starting pitcher?
And that's the thing. They were in on Max Fried and they were in on Corbin Burnes, two guys who are older than Garrett Crochet. And they're willing to offer them, assumingly, we know Fried, they offered an 8-year deal. I assume Burnes, they offered a long-term deal too. So you have no problem signing those guys to long-term deals. What's wrong with the 25-year-old? Like, who's built like a horse? And, you know, yeah, okay, he was injured, but he looks pretty good. Elbow seems healthy. Like, this should be a slam dunk. And I just wonder if I just think that front office is really uncomfortable handing out any sort of long-term contract to anybody. I mean, even to get Bregman here, they essentially had to offer him 3 1-year deals just to get him here because they didn't want to offer him 6 or 7 years. And I thought what was interesting, I think Kennedy sort of gave himself away. He was on EEI on the broadcast day during the game. And he said that there were two significant trades that fell through, or that, you know, they came close on but didn't happen while they were in Dallas. And that led them to pivoting in a way to go get Garrett Crochet. So what were those deals? Was it for Alcantara, who's already got some term left on his contract? Was it for Dylan Cease and they couldn't get it done because the asking price was too high and they pivoted to Crochet because they liked the deal better? I don't know. You know, those are just little breadcrumbs that Sam Kennedy left. And again, with that guy, take everything with a grain of salt. But again, you gave up so much prospect capital to get this guy. He's 25 years old. If you sign him to a 7-year deal, he's a free agent by the time he's 32. So if you're worried about him breaking down in his 30s, you can let him walk at that point, and it's fine. I don't think any pitcher these days is going to get, you know, a 10-year deal. So it's a deal that they should be able to get done. I just wonder if they're just so hesitant to give out long-term contracts. And if Crochet's sitting there going, I won't sign for anything less than 7 years at this, and the Red Sox really want him at like 5 years for either higher AAV or whatever, but something's not lining up there between the two. And it's just a massive gamble to take, because that number is going to really go up. And if they're not willing to pay it now, then yeah, you're right. They're not going to be willing to pay it then. So it's just a shame, because it's like, this should be a slam dunk. You got him in house. You know, he's here. He, you know, the team should be pretty good this year. You can easily get this done. But I think that front office is still really hesitant when it comes to signing pitchers, and it could end up really costing them with Crochet.
I think that the Crochet deal has the potential to be far better than the Chris Sale deal was. And I mean, those first 2 years were amazing. 20, 17 in 2018, and I know Sale broke down a little bit, but he was right in the thick of the Cy Young race both of those years. And then after that, he just completely broke down. And a lot of us thought he would because he had such a violent delivery and a really skinny frame. And I guess with Crochet in the back of your mind, you're hoping he doesn't blow his elbow out again. But he seems to have the physical makeup of a guy that could be a lot more dominant. And I think when Chris Sale got here, he was 28, 29 years old, something like that. Crochet's 25. So I think this could potentially be one of the greatest trades of this century. I don't know. I mean, what's another really good trade? I didn't obviously take notes on that before we came on, but you know, the Sale one was pretty good. The extension sucked. The trade was good. But I don't see why you don't just kind of maximize everything by making sure he's a part of your long-term future.
Yeah. The last comparable one was probably the Beckett trade. That was somewhat similar. So
yeah, you got Mike Lowell in it.
And look what happened there. Yeah. I mean, the Lowell part was an additional piece, but yeah.
Yeah, we just don't make a lot of good trades. I mean, the Evaldi trade was good, but he was a very short-term rental, and then we extended him, and the extension didn't go great. 2021 kind of salvaged that extension, but I mean, the Adrian Gonzalez... I mean, from a performance standpoint, I guess he was fine, but from a personality standpoint, he was pretty toxic. But that was probably the most recent example of where the extension was in place. Like, they had the framework of that done when they sent Anthony Rizzo to San Diego to get Adrian Gonzalez. So that was an Epstein era thing. And I don't think Dombrowski made a big move, really. All of his stuff was in free agency, so
he traded for Kimbrel. That was his big trade, I guess you can say.
Kimbrel had 3 or 4 years left on that, so I don't think there was a lot of urgency. But man, this is a front office that has taken a lot of L's in the last 5 years. So, I mean, if they're really trying to put their best foot forward and, you know, be a respected front office in Major League Baseball again, that's a move that has to happen. So, Let's pivot to the last thing here. Second base, it's like the eighth wonder of the world. Who's going to get it? It seems like it's Christian Campbell, but that dude blows right now. He's having a terrible spring. He did show some flashes defensively, so that's nice. We haven't had a good defender at second base since Pedroia, but he doesn't look ready from an offensive standpoint. And Alex Cora did tease today that perhaps Meyer has a shot at it.
Yeah, I was interested to see Meyer in the lineup at second base. I mean, ever since he was drafted, he's been exclusively a shortstop. He played a few games at third base in Worcester, but that was it. He's primarily been shortstop. They haven't played him at second base at all. He admitted today on the broadcast, he said, yeah, I've only gotten some limited time on the backfields at second base, but that's really been it. But man, watching the game, he's so smooth defensively. I mean, he looks like a natural second baseman. He turned a double play with ease. He took some short hoppers with ease. Like, every play with him looks easy. It looks comfortable. With Campbell, like, yeah, he made a couple of nice plays the other day, but I agree. I don't think he's ready. Defensively, I think he'd be okay, but I don't think he's ready at the bat. Like, I think he needs more time in AAA to really get the bat going before he's confident enough to be at the major league level. Marcelo Mayer looks good offensively and defensively. He looks like he belongs. Because even Roman Anthony, like, he's had a good spring, but he had a few moments where he kind of went over and that average went down a little bit. And, you know, again, this is kind of his first, you know, foray into it. And with Roman Anthony, your outfield is full anyway, because now Abreu's on track to start opening day. You know, you got Duran in left, Rafaela's in center. Rafaela's swinging a really good bat right now. So Anthony, I think, is going to be on the back burner for a little bit until there's an injury. But man, Marcelo Meyer, he looks ready. And I don't like the idea of him playing second base. I'll say that right off the bat. So the only way I'd want him on the major league roster to start the year is if Trevor Story's going back to second base. And I don't think that's a conversation they're having right now, because Story hasn't played second base, I think, at all this spring. I think he's been at shortstop or DH the majority of the time. I also think the Red Sox would be hesitant to do that because of the whole Devers situation. You know, that already kind of gave them some bad PR. And if Mayer makes the team and Story goes back to second, people are going to go, wow, so you're just moving your veterans all over the place just to accommodate these kids. So I don't think they want to go through that either. It feels like they really want Christian Campbell to have like an awesome week this final week and just, you know, mash at the plate, look good defensively, and then they can say, okay, he's ready. You know, screw David Hamilton. Christian Campbell's our starting second baseman. I think that's a bad idea. I think it's a bad idea to rush him into it. David Hamilton is fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with David Hamilton. He's not great, but he's hitting down in the bottom part of your order anyway. He offers a speed element that is going to help this team. Defensively, he's fine as long as you keep him at seconds. I would roll with that for now. I think this roster is good enough that the big three doesn't have to start the year at the major league level. As much as I love watching Marcelo Meyer right now, and I didn't think I'd be saying that, but of the big three, he's the one I would campaign for. But I just don't see the position switch happening. I don't see Meyer going to second base, and I don't see Story going to second base. It's not a thing right now. So I kind of fall back on what I've been saying all spring. Those three should start in Worcester. And then the rest, I think, will sort itself out, whether it's because of an injury or David Hamilton hits 180 the first 2 months, and eventually they go, okay, Campbell's mashing down in AAA, call him up. Do that. There's no reason to rush. Your roster's good. The rest of your division kind of stinks right now. You know, take it and run with it. Get off to a good start. And then if one of the big three is really mashing and is kicking down the door to go to the major league level, then you address it. I don't think there's any reason to rush any of these guys. So I would still prefer Hamilton at second, Story at short, just keep it the way it is. But I have a sneaky feeling they're going to force Campbell onto the opening day roster. I just hope it doesn't backfire.
So we know it's not Vaughn Grissom because he was optioned today. So that's definitely not happening. I don't think anyone saw that happening. I think they made up their mind that Christian Campbell was going to play second base the day Alex Bregman signed. Cora made up his mind. Breslow made up his mind. They loved the potential to have a superstar batting seventh or eighth in the bottom of the lineup, a guy that can rake and play the field, a guy that was probably the best minor league player in all of baseball last year. I think he is going to make the opening day roster no matter how this last week goes. I know he had a big day like a couple days ago. Had a nice play or two nice plays, and he had a double and like a cool swim move at second base. But I think they made up their mind. He's the second baseman no matter what happens. I don't think Marcelo Meyer is playing second base. They need him as Trevor Story insurance. He's going to miss 30, 40 games this season no matter what happens, just because he's Trevor Story. He's had arm injuries in the past. Even if he doesn't go out for a significant time, he's still going to be given days off late in the season. So Marcelo Meyer might be a guy just keep in mind he's never played AAA at all. Christian Campbell's played AAA at least for a little bit. He's more experienced than Marcelo Meyer at this point. I think they're going to just force Christian Campbell in the lineup if Story goes down, which probably will happen. I hope it doesn't happen for a while, but Marcelo Meyer is looking good enough to play, so I think that's what's going to happen.
So I kind of agree with Jason here. I don't want to see Christian Campbell go through a Tristan Casas-like slump that he went through in 2023. I don't see a huge benefit in that. Just let him go down, let him rake, let him force his way on eventually. I'm not a I Cam. Excuse me. David Hamilton was fun to watch last year. He was a spark plug. He hit for good contact and had a base running presence, very similar to Jaren Duran's. And I think he might have even had more stolen bases than Duran did by the end of the year. So you've got him, but you need a right-handed platoon essentially. So I think that would be Romy at this point, where Grissom has been optioned. And Romy, I think, was having an MRI done on something. Might have been his back, and they weren't too worried about it, but we'll see. But the downside to Hamilton, though, is Trevor Story can be a strikeout machine, doesn't hit for very high average. And then who is the real David Hamilton? Is he what he was last year, or is he the guy that couldn't really find his way onto a big league roster? I have a feeling it's maybe not quite in the middle, but you know, closer to the middle than what he was last year. So I'm just worried about your offensive production for your middle infield. And let's not forget, in a pinch, if we need him to, Sadon Rafaela played an okay second base. Not so great with shortstop, but he played an okay second base. So if Anthony's the guy that forces his way on, that's one thing that can be done. This is a Red Sox team that needs to get it right. Every game matters, whether it's April or September, and we should be putting ourselves in the best position to win. I mean, this is a team that's missed the postseason in the last 5 out of 6 years. Let's maximize everything and put the best people at the best times in the best spots is how I think they should handle it.
Yeah, that's probably the right way to do it. And yeah, David Hamilton probably over the course of a full season gets exposed a little bit. You know, similar thing happened to Brock Holt when he became an everyday player sort of out of necessity, and he got exposed. So Hamilton's a 4A player. He's fine. He's serviceable. But if you're really serious about going on a deep playoff run, getting there and going on a deep run, he can't be an everyday player. He's got to be a bench option. So, eventually the roster situation is going to shake itself out. Again, whether it's an injury, likely just Trevor Story, could be someone else. But I don't think Christian Campbell is going to be in AAA all year. I just want him to start there and then let the big three do their thing in Worcester. And, you know, it could even be a guy like Willy Abreu. Maybe he has a little bit of a sophomore slump and, you know, isn't quite, you know, fitting the bill. And Roman Anthony's hitting 400 down in AAA. Well, that's an easy move. So just let it sort itself out. Trying to force these kids onto the roster, it reminds me of like when Baltimore last year called up Jackson Holliday a week into the season. And yeah, they had the big moment on ESPN. Matt Holliday was there with his family and everything. That's great. Jackson Holliday hit like 175 for a month. Couldn't do anything at the major league level. And they eventually sent him down. And he was down in AAA the rest of the year. He was the number one prospect in baseball at that time. So, yeah, it's exciting when it happens, but if you rush it, you can screw the kid up. Now, Holiday's probably going to play every day this year on the big league roster, but who knows if he's recovered from that. I mean, that's, you know, that can really shatter someone's confidence. So I just don't want the Red Sox running into that situation, because you don't need to. Your roster's good. You know, you should be a favorite, not only to go to the playoffs, but a favorite to win your division at this point. So don't rush anything. Just take it day by day and let the roster kind of shake itself out.
I'll see if I can pull it up real quick, but Jackie Bradley Jr. in 2013, he hadn't made his debut yet, and we had lost Jacoby Ellsbury that winter to the Yankees, so we needed a second baseman. Yeah, here it is. Jackie Bradley hit 419 with a 507 on base, two home runs. One of them I remember very clearly was off Cliff Lee, and Lee was still pretty good at that time. In fact, at that trade deadline, I was kind of hoping we'd get him. in 2013. We ended up with PV and it was fine, but it's a relief to me in a way that none of them are like overly crushing it. Meyer's doing very well. He's hitting for good average, but he only has one homer, no doubles, two triples. So, you know, he's not, I wouldn't say he's crushing it, and he hasn't forced his way onto the roster, because I think it could almost be like a jinx. You know, let's just do it the natural way. And Theo Epstein, when he was, I've said this recently, but when he was the GM for 8 years, he had a hard rule that these guys were going to have 400 at bats at every single level of the minors. And they had a pretty good track record of developing guys. You know, you had Ellsbury and Pedroia and, you know, one or two other people. Mookie was drafted during the Epstein era, but not necessarily developed in that era. But yeah, so I just don't rush it. Don't rush it is the thing. So, all right. Well, we will wrap on that. None of us were anti Chapman in the closer role. And I think the whole fan base will be anti Chapman, you know, by the end of April, probably. I just, that might be a dumb thing. Nick, do you have something?
Yeah. Let me get one other point out. Like you said, oh, it's a Dane Rafaela easily could play second base, and then just refusing to put Masataka Yoshida out in the outfield after having a good spring swing in the bat just shows how much they dislike this guy, and they're just going to banish him. He can easily bat seventh, sixth in the lineup and play left field a little bit. I don't care how bad his arm is. If that's how they want to get him into the lineup, they can. It just shows they're neglecting him and they don't want him at all. It shows how they feel about him in this organization, how big of a mistake it was to even sign the guy. So that's going to be a mistake and a guy they're going to have to make a decision with very soon, because he's just eating up a spot on the roster, and you can't stash him on the IL that long when he's been hitting in spring and actually hitting okay. Pretty well, actually. I think he hit a home run a few days ago.
He did yesterday, yeah. I think. Yeah, I have no idea what they're going to do here. This is so unsettled. This team is so unsettled. We don't really know how the pieces are going to fall. I think we can predict pretty well what the second half of the season will look like, because I think if they're all healthy, the big three will be up. And Masataka Yoshida is the elephant in the room right now. The smaller elephant is kind of Trevor Story. Story, because what happens when Campbell and Meyer are both up? Then what happens? And Anthony's in the outfield. Where do you put Story? So I think the Red Sox are just kind of quietly hoping Trevor Story crushes it. That way, maybe he's movable. And who really knows with Yoshida? But in a weird way, I think Yoshida would contribute more offensively than Trevor Story. I really believe that, but it's hard. Now, I mean, if you're going to take third base away from Devers, it's hard to make it work. You know, if I don't know how Yoshida gets outfield time, because Duran's not losing time. I don't think Rafaela will lose time.
You'd have to put Rafaela at second base at that point, but they need him in center field. That's where his value's at.
But if we're still looking at the second half of the season, that's still going to be Campbell and Meyer. So I think so. Rafaela has to stay in center field, or he's just your super utility guy, you know, playing four out of every six games to give guys time off and whatnot. And he's having a beast of a spring. I mean, who's to say he just doesn't go nuts and, you know, is your two hole hitter by June or something? You know, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but he is drawing walks, which is really the only thing I care about. I mean, he's checked off a lot of other boxes. He just needs to walk more. He needs to be an on-base threat, you know? So Papelbon said early in the winter, Rafael is going to win the MVP this year. So, you know, let's see. I'm a skeptic, but man, that's what's fun about this team. That's why I'm excited. you have depth. You have amazing depth all across the organization. My only slight concern so far is the bullpen. But you know, you're the three pitchers that need to be healthy are healthy. Crochet, Buehler, and Houck. And then Bayo will be back soon. Who knows with Giolito, and who knows if he's going to pitch well. But you've got Richard Fitz. I'm a big Sean Newcomb guy. I'm intrigued, I should say. Maybe he'll flame out and not amount to anything, but right now he's intriguing. They have to put him on the 40, man. So I can't say with certainty that he's going to get one of the two spots, but he's made a hell of a case for it. And so that's why this team is fun, and there will be unexpected developments and some pleasantly surprising unexpected developments, and maybe Rafaela having a, I don't want to say resurgence because he hasn't surged yet, but having a breakout, you know, that we didn't foresee, you know, that would be cool, especially with a guy who can hit from the right side.
Yeah, absolutely. And who knows, maybe by, you know, past the trade deadline, Abreu's been traded for another starter or closer, whatever. So, you know, there's always things that can happen, especially around the trade deadline, that could open up spots for those guys.
Absolutely. All right. So we will wrap on that. If an extension happens, whether it's Crochet or perhaps one of the big three, I don't know why they can't get a Campbell one done. I mean, they got all the leverage at this point. I mean, he hasn't crushed it this spring. So, but if any of those happen, we will certainly be back to cover it. If nothing happens, we'll be back Monday night to do our yearly predictions show, as I mentioned in the intro. So hope everyone's having a good week. This is your last weekend without real baseball, so enjoy it, because I'm gonna be a couch potato. The Red Sox barely have any days off in April, by the way. They've got one after I think the fourth game, and then nothing until like the third week. So we're getting a lot of baseball in April. So everyone, thanks for joining us on all the platforms. Everyone, take care.